You are listening to 5 Minute Fables. Stories are the currency of human contact. They offer us a door into another world. Everyone enjoys a good story, and everyone needs a good story. Stories make us happy, they make us cry, and most importantly, they make us think and they make us grow. This project was produced in conjunction with Impact Theatre and Wired FM. It was recorded and produced in Wired FM and Impact Theatre in Limerick during the winter of 2006. All the stories in this programme are original and were written and recorded by Limerick young people in Impact Theatre and Wired FM studios. This project was funded by the BCI Sound and Vision Fund and Wired FM.
As a young girl, I hoped for a simple romance, but nothing ever goes the way you want it to. I have to say, I've probably had one of the most complicated romances ever. I was working in America as a Navy nurse. I love my job, as I got to go to so many places and meet new people. But most of the girls that joined the Navy just joined to meet guys. But that thought never crossed my head until I met the love of my life, your grandfather, Rafe, at a medical checkup, as he was training to be a pilot. It was love at first sight. But when there's a high, there's always a low. And that low for me was when Rafe was called to England to the war. I was very shocked to find Danny waiting outside my clinic in Hawaii months later, bearing bad news. Rafe was killed. His plane had been shot down. It was hard to get over him, but I knew at one point I'd have to. After the shocking news, me and Danny decided to stay close friends. But one thing led to another, and we started dating. Danny was the one thing I needed, and I was so happy after so many months. One day I fell pregnant, and it was the same day of the surprise return home of Rafe. I loved Rafe still, but I forced myself to love Danny more because he was the father of my child. The next day was the shocking surprise attack of the Japanese at Pearl Harbor. All that happened that day was panicking of nurses, losing friends, devastation and depression. I was relieved, though, to find that Danny and Rafe weren't killed. I knew it wouldn't be long, though, until the Americans got their payback. So Danny and Rafe were called on a secret mission to Japan. I was very upset because I didn't want to lose the man I loved again. As I waited in agony for weeks and weeks, I wasn't sure if they were alive or dead. As I waited at the airport, the look on Rafe's face was all I needed to hear. I knew Danny was dead. Me and Rafe got back together and raised our son Danny, your father, after that. I never told anyone this story, not even your father, but I hope you understand that wishing for a simple romance is the best thing ever.
She's alone in the house. Poor girl. Her parents in Paris and she's here. Alone. At home during a storm. God, it's a horrible storm. Lashing rain, thunder and lightning like mountains crashing down and sinister streaks of blinding light flashing across the sky. Storm is century and she's here. Alone. Drinking tea from her mug. She's too young to die. The lights go out. What do you think that is? She asks her teddy, baby up, fearfully. Suddenly, she hears the sound again. Kind of cross between someone whispering and strange, eerie music. She sees a shadow flicker across the window. She's shivering now and clutching her teddy for dear life. Then, as quick as it started, storm cleared up. I think we should go to bed now, she said to Baby Gap. During the night, when she was asleep, her kidnapper broke in and drugged her with chloroform, just to make sure she didn't wake up. She was picked up, bedclothes and all. Baby Gap clutched tightly to her side. In the hollow, it opened her up and took out her insides to make stew. She lay there, dead. The monster had put all sorts of pins and piercings on Baby Gap. It put them in a box, just an ordinary box, labelled. To the parents of Sarah Morgan, I'm the monster who no one dare tell of, because if they had, your daughter would be alive. Mr. and Mrs. Morgan arrived home a week later to find the box in their bedroom. The smell was horrendous. Carefully, they opened the box, scared of what they might see. Once they saw what had happened to their daughter, naturally, they cried bitterly and had a funeral. What was left of Sarah and Baby Gap was cremated, and that was the end of it. But secretly, they are glad.
It's Siobhan. I'm not here right now, but if you leave a message, I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Unless you're Maura, who I never want to talk to ever again.
Siobhan, it's me. Please, pick up the phone. I know you're there. Look, I was having a terrible day. It wasn't my fault. You weren't there when I needed someone to talk to. First off, like, I have the band practice. You know how bad band is. And the concert rehearsal? Don't even talk about it. Then, you think, my day can't get any worse. Get home and find that Misty, the cat, like, of course, has, like, died, so we have to go bury the cat. So if that isn't bad enough, I have to go straight, after my dinner, straight to my first aid exam. Find out that there's an exam 5 minutes before it. I actually fail it, and, like, they've never actually told anyone ever to, like, practice before, and, of course, happens to me, like, I have to practice. And, but, you know, he lives around the corner, like, and sure, he does first aid, like. I didn't mean to it wasn't what you think. I wasn't kissing him. We were talking away and suddenly he's, like, just fainted and gone unconscious, so I have to do CPR. Think my life's a picnic? Well, if you'd even bother to ring him, you'd know that he's in the hospital. Just please, Siobhan, will you ever, like, ring me back? I'll explain.
There's a very good reason I don't have my story with me today. You see, yesterday after the workshop, I left, and as I was walking through town, I realised I didn't have my story with me, and so I knew I really had to get it back. So I ran back up to Impact. Okay, I didn't run. I was at the other side of town, and I saw my parents in a car, so I asked them to bring me back up. And they said, okay, yeah. So they drove me back up to Impact. Okay, they didn't drive, because we have a bit of a weird car, actually. It's kind of like a bicycle, but inside a car, and they started pedalling. And so we were pedalling back up to Impact, and when I got out of the car, I went down to the door, and I started knocking, because I thought maybe if somebody was back in there, and okay, I didn't actually think that. I just thought maybe something will hear me, because that's the way Impact is. They have very weird things in there. And so I started banging really loudly on the glass, but nothing was happening. So I thought, well, maybe if I can pull this door open, because it's a bit dodgy, and I'll see what happens. So I started pulling the door really hard, but it just wouldn't budge. Okay, it did kind of move, but they have a very odd door. So it moved, but it moved in the wrong direction. And it started breaking, and I didn't want to break Impact's door, because they're a bit odd about those things. So I started pulling the other way, because I thought maybe it'll open now, but it still wouldn't. So I said, okay, maybe I can find Anne or Darren if I ring them. So I took out my phone to start. Actually, I didn't take out my phone because I didn't have a phone with me. I thought maybe if I shout really loudly, they might be around here. So I went up onto the street and started shouting really, really loudly. But all I got was odd looks from passerbyers. Actually, I didn't get any odd looks. A lot of people just came up to me and sort of formed a semicircle and started watching me. And so I got a bit freaked out and thought, actually, how about I can make a bit of money out of this situation, and maybe then I could bribe Darren to write me a story tomorrow. So I started doing a little bit of a dance, a sort of a jig, and singing a bit. Okay, it wasn't actually a jig, it was a weird contemporary dance, and some people from Dagda were actually in the audience, and they came in and started doing a bit of dancing with me. Okay, it wasn't actually dancing, it was more sort of rolling around on the floor for a while. And people started throwing things at me, but I couldn't work out if it was because they liked it or because they hated it. And, okay, I could. They hated it. It was terrible. I am not much of a street performer. So I was there rolling around on the floor with people throwing things at me and hoping maybe I could make some money, but it didn't really work out. And after about 5 minutes, everyone had just left, except for one person who was standing there. Actually, it was two people, but they were Siamese twins, so I wasn't sure if it was one or two people. And As I looked up at them, they said, oh, we might have a key for impact if that's what you're looking for. I don't know why they knew I needed a key for impact. Okay, I did. When I was doing my contemporary dance, I brought in a whole thing where I was showing how I needed a key for impact. I did this wonderful little movement with my hands, which represented a key, and I did a whole representation of a door, and they obviously got that. They were probably the only people who got it, but they did. And they said that they sometimes do work in the studio and that they could open it for me if I wanted. So I said, OK, I'll do that. OK, I didn't. I actually jumped up and started going, yeah, OK, brilliant, because I was really excited by this time, so I really needed the script back because I knew I was recording tomorrow. So I went down to the door with them and they took out this key. But it wasn't just any sort of key. It was it was a really long key. It was actually the same. It wasn't. It was very, very small. It was so small that it actually could fit in the palm of my hand. It was just really, really tiny. And so I didn't exactly know what they were going to do with it. But they said, no, don't worry. They took it out and they put it into the lock. But it was so small, it was like a pellet. And they just put it inside. And I stood there trying to work out what was going on. And then it exploded. Yeah. Okay, it didn't explode. It sort of imploded and burst the whole door in a odd sort of physical thing that I didn't know could happen. Well, I did know it could happen. We actually learned about it in physics. It's a weird thing that sometimes happen where things just turn into cheese. And the whole door just turned into a block of cheese. I didn't know what to do. And I know this sounds really weird and surprising, but it actually did happen. So I said, okay, this is unexpected. But I said, that can work. I can eat cheese. I can go through the door. So I started eating the door. Now, I know this sounds a bit surreal and weird, but it was working. So I was eating the door, and I'm sorry, Impact, I'll try and get you a new door or something. But I was eating through it, and I finally managed to get my way through this huge, giant block of cheese, and I got into Impact. But as soon as I got in there, I realised they'd just put a burglar alarm in, so I could hear it beeping. Okay, I couldn't actually hear it beeping, but I could see lots of little lights flashing, and I presumed it was a burglar alarm. Okay, I didn't presume it was a burglar alarm. I presumed it was some weird Impact performer doing some new sort of contemporary performance. And it turned out that I was right. They were lying across the bars on the roof with lots of different lights just shining around the room. And that's all they were doing. And I was a little bit freaked out by this, but I thought, well, I wasn't freaked out, actually. I thought it was really cool. I really enjoyed looking at it. So I wandered through and I thought, well, I'll just take my script and I'll leave because I don't want to disturb whatever they're doing. And I could see that they actually had my script up there. They were sort of throwing it to each other. Okay, they weren't throwing it to each other. They were actually writing on it. So I was trying to work out what they were doing and I just looked up and I thought, well, if I just grab it off them and run, they probably won't notice because they seemed a bit distracted in what they were doing. So I grabbed the script and I started running out through Impact's door. But then I realised the block of cheese was still there, but the hole was really small and hard to get through. So I had to start opening it up a bit more so I could get through it again. And then the performers were actually chasing after me. And it was weird. They had very odd clothes on and I couldn't... Well, they weren't actually that odd. They were fairly normal. But in fact, they weren't clothes at all. They were actually changing as they were running into an animal. And I couldn't work out what was going on. This was really, really starting to freak me out. And as I kept running, they started turning into elephants. Now, Impact is quite small for elephants. So I thought, right, this could be a big problem. So I started really opening up the cheese, and they actually started helping me by eating some of the cheese. They obviously needed to get out too. And so we managed to make a hole big enough for us to get through, as they were only sort of half turned into elephants. And we were running through, and then we got out onto the street. And by that time, they were really sort of turning into full-scale elephants. And so I was wandering down O'Connell Street with two elephants looking for my... Well, actually, it was three, because I forgot to say... I didn't realise there was another performer inside, and he'd run out as well. And he was also turning into an elephant, but he was pink. Well, I'm not sure really why. And we were wandering down O'Connell Street, three of us and me, and looking for my script because in all the confusion, it had blown away in a gust of wind. And they said, well, you know, we can help you, because they were talking elephants and talking elephants are weird like that. And so we wandered down and we thought, well, we'll try and maybe go into the bell table. They They might be able to help us, but there's more people there. Okay, we didn't actually. I just came across the bell table and thought, well, we could all do with some coffee. So I went down to the cafe there, thinking, we'll find the script later, because I'm kind of a procrastinator like that. Okay, I'm not really. I'm actually very good at finding things, but I was a bit worried about taking the script in here because I didn't think it was very good. So I thought, maybe if I get a coffee, I can tell this story tomorrow. And so we sat down. The elephants didn't really fit, but, you know, I get a lot of looks anyway. And we started just having coffee and talking about life and everything. And they reminded me that I was looking for this script. And I said, yeah, OK, I really should go looking for it. So I left them there and I wandered out to the bell table and started looking for the script wherever it could be. And I came across Anne walking down the street. Anne was doing the workshop with us. And she said that she'd found my script lying in a puddle and she gave it to me. But she said that she didn't, you know, think it was really legible. So I looked at it and the ink had all run and it was terrible. So I didn't know what to do. But I went home and I started reworking on it. And I actually don't have it with me today because after reading it, I thought it was terrible. So I thought I'd tell my odd story from yesterday. And that's why I don't have a proper story. Sorry.
These stories were read in order of broadcast by Roisin K. Byrne, Maura O'Neill and Mark Atkinson.
5 Minute Fables was coordinated by Anne Blake and Darren Maher of Impact Theatre and produced by Miriam Walsh of Wired FM. It was recorded in Impact Theatre and Wired FM studios in Mary Immaculate College in November 2006.